We're glad to be here today. This story had a real impact on our campus, and we're happy to share the lessons we learned along the way with each of you. Once a year, our department in University Communications has a strategy retreat in February, and so this, where we're snowshoeing, is above Sundance Ski Resort. This is our reward for spending the morning locked in a room, talking about what worked and what didn't work in the past year, and looking ahead to our strategy for the coming year. My favorite Canadian, John, is in the lead there in the photo. And John is our social media manager. This is my obligatory joke about transitioning from winter to summer. Thank you. Summer is a social media intern in our office. She's a student who's worked with us for 12 months. This is a separate conversation. We won't present on it today, but we rely very much on student employees in our office. And if any of you are interested in learning how we do that and how we get so much out of them, I'd love to connect with you in person or on social. Summer played a huge role in this project, and so she's here to tell you about the production and the impact that the story had. We want to get your reaction to the work we've done, and so we'll look for that on the conference hashtag on Twitter. One thing I want to share with you, a specific trigger warning. We received direct messages to our Instagram account from people who experienced sexual assault, and some of those messages will be shown on the screen, which we understand could be triggering or upsetting to people who've experienced sexual assault themselves. Just want you to know that's coming. One other lesson we've learned, and you'll see a bit of a discrepancy between what we say and what's on screen at one point, is that we've transitioned away from using the word victim at BYU. We had a victim advocate, and now the title of that position is survivor advocate. We've received feedback from those who've experienced sexual assault that the term survivor is more positive and more forward-looking, and so we're transitioning to using that term. And I apologize if we revert back to the old term, but that's what's happening now at BYU. So getting to the premise of our presentation today, I firmly believe that communications is a function of leadership. And you heard a little bit about that from Nikki Sundstrom last night. We, as a nation, are coming off of some heart-wrenching and dramatic testimony at the Senate Judiciary Committee. A lot of people are translating and channeling that energy into political activity, which is commendable. I have a specific invitation for each of us here to take that energy into our work, because a lot of the conversations about what happened in the Senate centered on the question of why don't people who experience sexual assault come forward? And with the platforms we have and the positions we hold, we have an opportunity to improve that dynamic and that situation. So right now, John's going to cover how this all got started.
Thanks, Joe. So yeah, Nikki presented last night, and really the beginning of this project for us goes back to hearing Nikki present at EduWeb a couple years ago. And really feeling energized from that conversation of the good that we can do and the impact that we can make through social media. Just a big shout out to her and also to Brianna and conferences like this that bring us together where we can feel energized and inspired to do great work. So what we'll be covering today, we're going to look at kind of the lay of the land. Obviously, this is a topic that is not new to most of us on our campuses. This is something that all of us are looking at and addressing on our individual campuses. We're going to talk about how social media can help instead of just hurt the situation. We're going to show you this story that we produced at BYU that really had some pretty significant results for us. We'll go through some lessons learned on the planning and execution of that story, and hopefully let you know how you can produce something similar at your institution, whether around this topic or, as that first slide said, another tough topic. This is a tough topic to address the right way at the right time on social, but going through this, we believe that it can be done really well, and we can also address other tough topics on our campuses as well, and our audiences appreciate that transparency. Okay, so you've seen the headlines, right? These are all over the place. Whether it's something that's happening on our campus with a student, with a professor, with alumni, whether it's a complex legal issue, or students who are trying to just get in front of the story and make some significant change happen, hopefully we get to the point where we can see a headline like this, that services are improved, policies change, we get through maybe some tough situations and then can talk to people about the changes that happen. So that's what happened at BYU. We've had our own issues and policy changes that took some time to implement, and eventually we saw the headlines that things are improving, policy is changing, but we were left after that situation with this question of what do we do now? And from a media relations standpoint, it's kind of tempting when you're going through something really hard in the media and you feel like, oh, this maybe is a little bit over and we've addressed it and we can move on. But with this issue, it felt like we really had an opportunity to do something more. And so we had this realization that changing policy does not mean that you've changed culture. The policy changers, the administrators, the president, the high-level senior leadership at the university, they're able to change the policy, but the culture is something much more complex. The culture changes in a village, right? And if we use that metaphor of our university being a village, then social media is kind of like the town square, right? And I think we've used this metaphor before as well. And if we're social media managers, we have a big impact on what is shared in that town square and how the conversation goes. That really has a chance to impact culture. So we felt like we needed to do something, increase the conversation, and impact that culture.
So I was a freshman on campus when some controversy arose over those cases of sexual assault on our campus that John was talking about. And I knew that there was a conversation happening as a student. I knew that these things were going on, but I just didn't know how to engage with that topic. I felt very taboo, and I just didn't know where I fit into the whole thing. So fast forward to my junior year when our office released the Campus Climate Survey on Sexual Assault. Many of your campuses have done one of these, or you're planning on doing one of these, but what these surveys do is they talk about the instances of sexual assault on your campus, the attitude and awareness on your campus, as well as recommended actions based on your campus's culture. And this survey was the first time that, as a student, I had a very good understanding of what was really going on around me and how I could really, how that was affecting me and the people around me on my campus. As an office, there were three things that stood out to us. The first was that survivors turned to friends and roommates. The second was that these friends and roommates didn't know how to help. And the third thing came to our attention as we brought in Dr. Lindsay Orkowski from Brown University, a leader in the field, to talk through these results with our office. And she pointed out to us that our BYU students were really eager to help. We realized that this information gave us an opportunity to lead, and tying back to Nikki Sundstrom's guidance, to lead out on social. We had an opportunity where our students wanted to help, and they needed to help, but they just didn't know how. So we took this as our opportunity to teach them how. So this is our BYU Instagram page, and something that we've had a lot of success doing on our account is student takeovers, where a student will talk about what they're studying, the clubs they're in, and it creates a really good environment for mentorship and peer-to-peer communications through the DMs, where students will create these relationships and ask questions. And that was the tone we wanted to strike with this takeover, is that one-to-one, one-on-one communication. So we took to our Instagram. That was our first step, choosing Instagram. And this is where our student body is congregated now. They don't use Facebook as much as they used to, at least. And so it wouldn't make sense for us to take to Facebook to make a video like this to really reach the audience that we needed to. So now we're going to show you the video. It is 5 minutes long, which might seem long for a social video, and it is. But our analytics show that our drop-off was very minimal. And in fact, our drop-off was less than the drop-off on our average videos. So please use the hashtag. Give us your reactions, ask your questions so that we can be sure to address those in the second half of our presentation. Hi, BYU. On today's Instagram story, we will be talking about an important topic on our campus as well as other campuses throughout the country, sexual assault.
Specifically, we will inform you how to help someone who's experienced sexual assault, show you where to go, and introduce you to people who can help. That's what makes this so important for all of us to know and be able to help. Being a resource for those around you who are going through what can be an extremely overwhelming, painful, and confusing experience can have a lasting and vitally important impact.
Whether the assault was on campus or off campus, a day ago, a month ago, or even before they were a student at BYU, It's important to know how to be the best resource possible. Now here's BYU nursing professor Julie Valentine with some tips on how to start.
If a friend comes to you about a sexual assault, you start by believing. Your response should cover 3 points. First, you say, "I believe you." Second, you say, "I'm so sorry this happened to you." Third, you ask, "What can I do to help?" As we introduce the services available to victims of sexual assault, it's important to remember that they are in charge of which services and resources they access.
There's no right or wrong order as to how or when to use these resources. Some are there just to talk to someone confidentially. Others are there if the victim is ready to take action against their perpetrator. Here are two very important words to understand in this process. One is amnesty, the other is confidentiality.
First, let's look at healthcare services, as rape is a healthcare issue. Whether at the BYU Student Health Center or a local emergency department, there are healthcare providers to provide care to victims and offer medications to prevent sexually transmitted infections and pregnancy. It's important to remember that if a victim reports an assault within 5 to 7 days, they have the option of having evidence collected. Whether or not they decide to have evidence collected, they should always talk to healthcare providers about their assault to receive the best care. Next, let's look at possible police involvement. Whether it's BYU campus police or a local law enforcement agency, they'll first make sure that the victim is safe. They'll then gather information about the assault and possible evidence and set an appointment up later for a more detailed interview.
I want to introduce you to Lisa Levitt. She's BYU's victim advocate. She's a completely confidential resource to help a victim of sexual assault through the process of healing.
Experiencing a sexual assault is very traumatic. I am here to listen and support you in whatever way I can as you navigate this difficult time. I am an independent entity on campus, not connected with the Title IX or Honor Code offices. My services are free and confidential. In a typical visit with me, we would begin by helping you cope with the immediate trauma you may be experiencing. An important part of my role is accompanying you as your advocate as you navigate medical, law enforcement, and other resources on and off campus.
Hi, I'm Steve Smith, and I'm the director of the Counseling and Career Center. Victims of sexual assault and violence often need continued help and support. We can provide that in counseling and psychological services free of charge.
Next up is Tiffany Turley. She's the director of BYU's Title IX office. The Title IX office can offer very important resources to help victims remain in school and be successful while navigating this process.
Hi, I'm Tiffany. At the Title IX office, we're here to help. We can provide resources, do an investigation, work with your professors, the housing office, financial aid, really anything related to your campus experience in order to allow you to continue in school while you deal with this difficult time. It's important to remember and know that the Title IX office will never share victim or witness information with the Honor Code office. Being a victim of sexual misconduct is never a violation of the Honor Code. At the Title IX office, all of our investigations are fair to both parties, and we want to make sure that everyone who comes into our office is heard, respected, and cared for. Bottom line, we're here to help, and we want to help.
Thanks for watching. We hope it was helpful and that you feel empowered to be an effective resource to help those around you.
This is just the start. We hope to continue an ongoing conversation about the important topics we discussed here today. If you have any questions, send us a DM, and some of those people you met today will be available to answer them.
So once again, if you've got questions, we'd love to see them on the hashtag, and we'll promise to get to all of them at some point this morning. And I want to talk right now about the social listening that we had set up. Knowing that we would get a lot of DMs in response to this story, we scheduled there's an invitation. We scheduled a conference room in our student center where we'd have a team ready to work collaboratively to respond in the best way possible to each message. And the people we had in the room include those that you've seen in the story, Lisa and Tiffany. Dr. Julie Valentine coordinated with us in advance to give us some prepared material because she had she was scheduled to testify in our state legislature on a related issue. So she had some prepared responses to give to us about the medical and law enforcement side. Ben Ogles is a dean on our campus and also served as the campus climate survey committee chair. And since this was coming on the heels of the climate survey, he made some time to be there in the conference room with us to respond. Dr. Jenny Bingham from our counseling center was there and consulted with us. We had on call our general counsel attorney, who works on Title IX issues, made a decision not to have her in the room looking over her shoulder at everything. I see some heads nodding about lawyers looking over your shoulder. But we wanted her and did use her on as needed when there was a specific response where we thought we'd need that help. And then the three of us. With Instagram, there's not a clean way of keeping track of who you've responded to and who you haven't. And so we put it all in a spreadsheet, each question, each response, and who was assigned to make sure that we drafted it correctly and who was and whether we had actually responded to that individual yet or not. And so we're going to get into some of the messages. This is one where somebody was a helper and knew about her something her roommate went through. And the specific pieces of this, the gist of it is, I'm worried about my roommate. So we made the decision here not to respond just as Brigham Young University, but we had our survivor advocate respond and identify herself. And this is the key message that she provided, that I can help your roommate on a walk-in basis anytime, and I'm also here to help you as somebody who's there for her. Some of these situations get complicated, as you can see here. This is a message where somebody was confided in, but the person who experienced the assault didn't want any action taken, which is a hard spot to be in. Both parties in this conversation need some, you know, have to process their own feelings in a very tricky situation. And so, once again, we asked Lisa to respond to this. This is the value in having the experts with you in the room, because none of the three of us would have handled this in the best way, but the expert was there to handle it how it needed to be handled. Clarifying questions came in. This one asking, is it too late to report? And so the answer is clearly no. This one here, what if you don't know whether what you experienced was assault or not? This hit us pretty hard, where we realized, okay, this is our Instagram account, and this conversation's happening. Somebody for the first time is coming forward to try and figure out what went on. And it really made us rethink the potential of the platform, that we have that responsibility that Nikki was talking about, that if you're intentional and thoughtful with the data and the needs on your campus, you can make a huge difference. This is one that we thought would be coming. Are these resources available to men? Our data on our campus show that 1 in 7 victims, and I said it again, I'm sorry, 1 in 7 survivors of sexual assault are male, and we'll talk a little bit more about how we presented knowing that that would be coming, but just the positive support of these resources are definitely available. So backing out to look at the overall picture of the response, with 24,000 story views, we've got more than 100 DMs, 11 from people who are personally in crisis, and then 6 helpers of people who had experienced assault. A couple dozen clarifying questions, but the number one response we got was a very sincere thank you for doing this. And in one case, the resolving concerns, somebody who had been a participant in a Title IX investigation was not satisfied with how it went and was able to reopen the conversation with our Title IX coordinator. In the week that followed, we posted the story at the beginning of a school week, right as the first classes were beginning. And as that week carried on, both our Title IX office and survivor advocate reported an influx of scheduling, walk-ins, phone calls, a lot of interest that happened. This reporting is stuff that we wanted to see happen.
Okay, so we have a question on the hashtag for Maddie. This is a good clarifying question of what we just talked about, asking how long we had those people in the response room there. So we launched the story at 9 a.m. So first of all, using the right voices here was really important for us. We really felt like Summer and John did a good job here. The tone was important. We wanted to make sure we weren't using a BYU cheerleader. We didn't want to use a kind of theater and media arts student. We wanted to use an authentic student voice and voices. As Joe said, having a male voice here was important, and we actually didn't consider that initially. Initially, we were going to have Summer lead out on this on her own. Julie Valentine, the nursing professor in the story, as we met with her, she suggested she'd have a male voice there. Men tend to check out of these conversations early on if you have a voice that can relate to them, that can be important. So we're happy to include John there. Speaking of tone, we also wanted to make sure we towed a line here. You may have seen this poster led to some national headlines around the question of when we're trying to make a topic like this cute or funny or entertaining, is that trivializing the content? And we understand the temptation here, right? Because this is a topic that maybe isn't natural for us to put on social media. We think we need to put some extra humor or something to engage people in on it. But we've got to be careful we don't trivialize the content of what we're talking about. So we tried to play it pretty straight, use some authentic voices, and we felt like they came across pretty well.
So I'll jump in and answer two other questions that I saw on the hashtag. Question, why did we post this as an Instagram story as opposed to a regular Instagram post? I'm going to say just because we've seen better engagement on stories. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, we're at a tipping point, really, where story content is being viewed more than feed content now, I believe. And we're getting incredible results in the stories. Also, the DM functionality turned out to be really, really important. We would not have gotten those same kind of direct messages in feed content because it's all public. And I'd like to say that was very strategic on our part. We didn't really realize the benefit of that until we were in it and seeing the impact and authenticity of those DMs. So that was another really important part in the end, was that direct message functionality through the stories.
Mm-hmm. The audience that we addressed directly in this story was the helpers. And that was really driven by the data we found in our campus climate survey, where all the students on our campus said, yes, I really care about this issue, and most of them said, I know very little about it, so there was that big gap. So we made the decision not to address survivors of assault in our story. We addressed the potential helpers. And this slide here is basically deputizing each student on our campus to be a helper of someone in crisis. And that's why the interest stayed so high throughout a 5-minute story, is because they had now been given that call to action.
Experts here were extremely important. You saw that we included them in the story itself, but also in the script process, they were extremely important. We were going back and forth on scripts all the time, sending it to them. They were giving us feedback on important wording changes. We mentioned Julie's recommendation. We also actually utilized them in helping promote the story. We'll talk about that in a second.
This project took a long time to put together. It didn't just happen in a day. We had to get a lot of things right before showing it on our Instagram. So this is one of the drafts that I got in an email from John of the script. And John would send these drafts. You can see a list here of all of the copies that I got. And he would send these around to our office and members of our team for us to look through, make sure we were striking the right tone, make sure that we were getting the details right, make sure we weren't forgetting anything. And as he mentioned, while we were doing that, we were utilizing our experts and we were sending it around to Julie and making sure that we were really getting the details right, which is part of where we had to add John in the video to our team to make sure that we were, you know, covering everybody and engaging all of our audience. Another person we utilized was our campus videographer, and he's very talented, makes a lot of beautiful videos for us, and we wanted this to have a high production value. We wanted people to pay attention to this. It couldn't be shot on an iPhone. Despite the fact that we were using our Instagram stories, it needed to look better than an average iPhone video. So we utilized our campus videographer, made sure that it looked good, and we also were aware that if it looked too good, it would draw attention to itself instead of the content, and so we wanted to be aware of that as well.
Promotion here was huge. Obviously, this is not your typical fun, engaging, entertaining story that's going to go viral on itself. So we put a lot of work into thinking through who are our influencers here, who can share this, who should we reach out to. So we made a list and gave some different assignments to different people to reach out to them. Some of them included the experts in the story, other faculty and staff on campus who feel adamant about this topic. Also, a student influencer group, some brand ambassadors that we'll talk about in a second, and as well as local media, which was an interesting one. So Julie, actually, as we finished up this interview with her, she asked us, are you going to write a press release about this, get this out to media? And we had talked about that, and we felt like it was a little self-congratulatory on this topic. We didn't want to appear like we're patting ourselves on the back too much here. So we said, no, we're not going to do a press release. And she said, well, if you're not going to pat yourself on the back, then I'll do it for you. And we didn't stop her from doing that. She's a world-renowned expert on this topic. She's being contacted by news media constantly about the latest things she's working on and researching. So she reached out proactively to some specifically local media, and they were interested. They came on the day of the story to do a story and did some kind of man-on-the-street interviews and got some in-the-moment reaction. But actually, when she pitched them, Channel 4 here, they came back to us and said, can we have the file of the Instagram story? Can we run that on a newscast beforehand? We said, we'd like to debut it on the Instagram channel first. So we actually gave them an embargoed Instagram story, which is something we haven't done in media relations before. The other first thing that we ever did was using Julie Valentine as an influencer in media relations. Influencer media relations and embargoed Instagram stories are some new territory for us, but it was fun. This was a columnist at a local Salt Lake City paper who was working with Dean Ogles, who was in that response room. Same kind of situation here. We asked Dean Ogles if he'd reach out to her and let her know about the Instagram story. She had a very complimentary tweet and linked directly to the story. This is that student ambassador team. Okay, so we've got that. This was our student ambassador team. We call them our social media street team. We bring them together once a month for meetings. We kind of deputize them and help us amplify our message. Summer will talk a bit more about that.
So these students were crucial in getting the word out to other students on our campus. And so John sent them an email the night before describing what it is that we were doing, why it's important for our campus, and what we needed their help with. And in that email, he included a couple of resources. The first was the first 15 seconds.
Hi, BYU. On today's Instagram,
the first 15 seconds of the Instagram story. And the second was the example one that you can see on the right, showing them a way that they could share it to their on their Instagram story and direct people back to our story. And many of them did do this. We saw posts throughout the day of these street team members sharing and directing people to our story. In addition to that, they took to Twitter and started talking about what it was that we were doing and telling people to go check it out, which led to other students on our campus joining the conversation, which led to a professor on our campus joining the conversation. And that even led to conversations in higher education circles, such as this tweet from Liz Gross, who is obviously a loud voice on, or a prominent voice in Twitter and higher education. I mentioned earlier that we didn't share it to Facebook originally because that's just not where our student body is anymore. But it was important to us to reach everyone, and there are some students who are still on Facebook primarily. And so we did post it there, and as you can see, maybe it's a little small, but Joe gave it a boost to students, so we were targeting the audience that we needed to see this, and that was really a powerful reach for us. In addition to that, we took to Twitter, shared it there as well. This is a very Twitter-friendly conversation. Those people there wanted this information. They wanted to help. They wanted to engage with this topic, so it did well there also. One question that I think was on the hashtag is that where is this so that you can share it with your campus, and also where our students wanted it. There was a big concern that this would disappear after the 24-hour period and that students wouldn't be able to find these resources again. And so as we had planned on doing already, we pinned it to the top of our account. So it's there under resources and still accessible today. We have about a 70% open rate, an average of about a 70% open rate on our student email. And so that was one of the last places where we knew that we could reach our students. And so we included that there. You can see you can make all the difference if a friend confides that she or he has been sexually assaulted. And so we directed them there. So hopefully at this point, we had already reached everyone through social media, but there was that last effort there as well. This is just our spreadsheet of of what the day looked like, the logistics, where things were being posted, when they were being posted, so that everybody was on the same page. You can see our tweets are there, our Facebook post is there, when lunch was being ordered for the control room, and all of the logistics were there to keep us all on the same page.
So, answer two other questions that came in on the hashtag. Christopher asked how long we were in the response room. It was the full business day. At the end of the workday, we had a pretty good library of responses to draw from for stuff that happened throughout the evening. And as we see, since all of our students are in the same location, when it's time to go to bed, the activity drops on the story. So we got a decent night's sleep that night and then continued to respond in the morning. Another question about this section here. How did we work with... Sean asked... the Title IX obligation for reporting with the DMs. Since our Title IX coordinator was there in the response room, everything that came in from this story for the 24 hours was, she saw that. And so I assume that takes care of it and that we're absolvable of any requirement beyond that since she was there on the team.
There may have been a few things that trickled in afterward and we just forwarded them directly to her.
Yeah. So everything that came in was, that was your question, right? So all of it was run through our Title IX office. Jamie asked about working with university leaders. We decided to take a model where we asked first for limited local approval within our department just to begin work on it, because I really don't like asking for something that can be shot down before they can really visualize what it is. And so the metaphor that we use is if you're going to fundraise for a building, you don't just say, hey, we need a new building. You say, will you fund this? It's right there. You can take a look at the specs. You can see exactly what it is. And so we asked our boss, who's on the president's council, can we get started working on this? Here's our plan. She says yes. And then 3 months later, we have something that looks like a finished product, and we shop it around to the 3 vice presidents and the university president to get the go-ahead. One lesson we learned, we probably would have left more time between that final review and when we published. We did the final review on a Friday. The story was going to publish early the next school week. We're also under that media embargo clock that was ticking. So there was something that our president caught. Thank you. I hope everyone's okay, and I will never forget this presentation. we had our experts review the script. We reviewed the script. Our student life vice president reviewed the script. The final review by our president, he caught a mistake. So thank goodness the president reviewed the script. And the mistake was that our male narrator gave the definition of confidentiality when he was trying to define amnesty. So he got the right thing to the wrong term. And so over the weekend, we pulled that video segment and just put up the text for how amnesty is defined, and had to work a little extra over the weekend, work with our general counsel to get the language exactly right. As a president and the general counsel are leaving our offices late on a Friday night when we had it all tidied up, it's kind of stressful to have your president look over your shoulder when you work. And I wasn't in a good place when that conversation ended. But he turned and he said, we're doing this again next year, right? And it hit me, oh, he's correcting us because he cares, because he sees the value. And so if you have the data, if you're thoughtful about planning things, I'm confident your leadership will have the same kind of buy-in and see that we need to keep the conversation going because we have a new crop of students each year and they need to hear this message.
Hopefully you've seen that this was a pretty good result for us, and we found a way to effectively approach what is a tough issue on social. It really comes back to utilizing that data. Going back to the campus climate survey and pulling out specific data points that our students want to help in this issue, they simply don't know how to. Having firm data, you know, to take to university leadership and say, this is why we're doing it, is very important. All of us have data on our campuses that we can pull from around tough topics, so I'd encourage you to do that. I mean, we know of the impact that social can have, but especially think of it as a cultural impact, right? When it deals with policy changes and cultural changes, social can play a really big role there. Instagram stories in general, I know some of us are in transition from Snapchat to Instagram and doing a lot of different things on our campuses, but hopefully we see the value in the stories functionality. That's become one of our biggest tools in our social media toolbox right now in reaching students in a direct and authentic way. It doesn't feel overly markety. It feels a little more real than other stuff that we do there. And so use Instagram stories. The audience was so important. Joe talked about it, but making the decision that we're not just going to speak to sexual assault survivors here and say, if you've been assaulted, listen to the story, but hey, every single BYU student, you might know someone who goes through this really hard thing. You need to know how to help them. That shift in directing who we were talking to was really, really important. Experts, I mean, we're all on college campuses, and it's easy for us to get stuck in our little offices and not realize that we're on a campus of literal world-renowned experts in a ton of different fields. We can utilize them in some really important ways. This takes time. I think you saw that. This was a three-month process from start to end with a lot of script changes and shooting this well and editing and getting it right. So take your time to do it right. The promotion is so important, and the listening. I really think that's the most important thing that we did here. And that day, being in that response room with our campus experts and responding to these vitally important messages was honestly the most important day that I've ever had at the office. Being able to look back on that and see the impact we were able to make and just to take the time to listen, understand this topic better in general, and respond very thoughtfully through experts was an incredible thing. If you have final questions, use the hashtag. We've been a little interrupted here today, so we might need to get with you in person or respond digitally, but we'll do that. Thank you to all those who've put questions there so far.
This is my friend Isaac, and it was just a couple of days before we released this story when Isaac came to me and told me that his friend had been sexually assaulted the night before, and he was looking to help. And he didn't know how to help, and he wanted to know if I knew how to help. And luckily, I had been working on this project, and I knew all of the resources, and I had slides and information that I could send him to hopefully help his friend. This was the point where this story became really impactful to me. I knew that if my friend was asking this question and was looking to help and needing to help, that there was somebody who needed his help, that other students on our campus were feeling the same. Other students wanted to help. And that was the point where I knew that this was really going to make a difference and had the potential to be very impactful on our campus. And it was. It turned out in the DMs we saw that people got the help they needed and are continuing to get the help that they need. And this was really an important project for me to be a part of. And I hope that you learned something today that you can take back to your campus and make a difference in one way or the other. And so thank you for letting us share this with you today.